This is Native America Calling. I'm Andy Murphy. Federal money poured into tribal accounts during the pandemic. $20 billion from the American Rescue Plan Act is helping tribes keep businesses afloat, manage the health crisis, and provide basics to tribal citizens. While the relief funds are welcome, some tribal officials are questioning the unequal allocation of money. A Harvard Project study adds fuel to the debate, pointing out what the authors say are inequities stemming from the federal government's formula decisions. We'll learn more about it coming up right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Following a court trial in June 2020, a federal judge ruled that the state of South Dakota does not have the authority to impose contractors' excise tax on the companies who renovated the Royal River Casino. The casino is owned by the Flandreau Santee Sioux Tribe and is located on reservation land. The state appealed that opinion to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, which was heard Wednesday. Victoria Wicks has more.
The arguments before the Eighth Circuit focused on balancing the interests of the tribe against the interests of the state. Assistant Attorney General Yvette LaFrentz tells appellate judges that contractors working in South Dakota are licensed by the state, and whether they're working on or off the reservation, paying excise tax as a condition of that license.
The contractor's excise tax is deposited into the general fund, which is then used to fund various services that benefit the tribe, tribal members, and the contractor.
LaFrentz says the state has a legitimate right to tax, even if the tribe's revenue is reduced. Rebecca Kidder represents the Flandreau Santee Sioux Tribe. She says the tax is assessed against the contractor, but under industry standards, the contractor passes that expense along to the tribe. Kidder says the casino project was subject to tribal and federal regulations, not state. And she notes that the state excise tax on contractors for work done on the reservation does not go toward licensing the contracts for engineering and construction. She says that fact was brought out at the June 2020 trial.
It was uncontroverted evidence that it goes directly into the general fund of the state. None of it is set aside specifically for this project or regulation of construction.
Kidder says the National Indian Gaming Commission has the authority to regulate the casino, and not just the gambling portion of the business, but also the conditions of the facility and its construction. And she says if the casino fails to meet standards, the commission can shut it down. Kidder says the value of the casino to the people of the Flandreau tribe outweighs the state's general interest in raising revenues. The Eighth Circuit three-judge panel will deliberate and release an opinion later. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Members of the Apache Stronghold are in San Francisco seeking protection of Oak Flat, a sacred site in Arizona. Apache Stronghold, a nonprofit community organization, is going before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals Friday. They're urging the court to block a copper mine slated for the sacred area, arguing the destruction of the site is a violation of the free exercise of religion. Apache Stronghold and allies held a rally Wednesday near the court. The event was streamed online. Winsler Nosey Sr. is founder of the Apache Stronghold.
Friday, the federal court is going to hear a case that's going to affect this country, Native and non-Native. Native people, our religion is going to be wiped from the face of the earth. Don't think that your religion is safe on any reservation, because when this passes, it sets the course for the next 100 years.
A day of prayers being held in the Bay Area Thursday, and a public listening session is planned Friday as the case goes to court. Resolution Copper and those in support, including top political leaders in Arizona, say it will create jobs and have an economic boost. This week, the Senate passed an act which included a one-year extension for tribal governments to utilize COVID-19 relief aid. The deadline of December 2022 would allow tribal governments additional time to use CARES Act funds. The bill now heads to the House for further consideration. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
The Indian Arts and Crafts Board promotes Indian artists of federally recognized tribes through its online source directory. Information on this no-charge opportunity available at doi.gov/IACB. Who support this program.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Andy Murphy. The largest tribes have hundreds of thousands of members, and some of the smallest tribes have just a dozen members or so. The federal government's American Rescue Plan Act allocated $20 billion to all 574 federally recognized tribes back in March. The government's distribution formula for pandemic relief relies heavily on the number of tribal citizens and the number of tribal employees. Researchers with the Harvard Project on American Indian Economic Development crunched some numbers and found that just 30 tribes got more than half of all the funds. In this hour, we'll hear about that study and talk to tribal officials about how tribes have vastly different needs that the federal pandemic relief formula didn't necessarily take into account. How are you seeing federal pandemic money put to use in your Native community? How does your tribe's share of those funds compare with others? Give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, joining us from Boston, Massachusetts, is Eric Henson. He's a research fellow at the Harvard Project on American Indian Economic Development. He is Chickasaw. Welcome to Native America Calling, Eric.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for having me on today.
All right. Thank you for joining us. So it looks like most of the money went to some of the largest tribes, and that appears to make sense on the surface. But what is the problem with the formula? Well, I guess we can start off. Tell us a little bit more about this formula. And it's a formula that the Treasury used, right? Just for these ARPA funds, right?
Yeah, so the ARPA money, the $20 billion you mentioned, was paid out in basically three stages. The first stage involved the first $1 billion, $1 billion divided among the tribes equally. And there are 574 different federally recognized tribes, but the number of entities that got payouts were a little bit higher because some of the sub-bands and whatnot were counted as separate entities. But putting those details aside, that first stage was $1 billion divided equally among all the tribes. And then the second stage was going to be 65% of the money, the remaining money, paid out based on tribal population. So, of course, as many of your listeners probably know, nations like the Navajo Nation and the Cherokee Nation have very large population counts. So it stands to reason that those tribes would get a large amount of dollars in absolute terms. And then that third stage of the payout was going to be that remaining 35%, which was about $6 2/3 billion. And that money was going to be paid out based on the number of employees that tribes had. So it sounds like on the face of it, well, if 65% of the $19 billion is being tied to tribal citizenry counts, you know, enrolled tribal citizens, and only 35% is being paid based on tribal employees, well, that sounds like you're weighting the tribal population higher than the employee count, which is true in terms of the percentage dollars. But what you find is that big tribes like Navajo got a little more than $2 billion. But those dollars, if you look at them in terms of how much money the tribe got per tribal citizen, it's relatively low because you're dividing that total pile of dollars by a very large population count. And the reverse kind of holds if you have, say, a small tribe that has a lot of employees. They might get quite a lot of money based on those tribal employees. And then if you consider how much money the entire pile of money that small tribe got per tribal citizen, you end up seeing very high dollar values per tribal citizen. And so one of the ways we've been looking at the numbers lately is not just, well, how much of the money went to the top 10 tribes or 20 tribes that received the absolute dollars, but how much money went to different tribes based on citizen counts, population numbers versus employee numbers. And that's where we start to see what we're referring to as kind of the maybe inequities that are flowing out of this formula.
All right. So when a tribe, you know, like you're saying, a tribe that might have a small number of employees, a small number of citizens, but then has a large number of employees. Are you saying that maybe that, maybe we could say that that tribe has a big gaming enterprise and that their tribe is already wealthy? Or is that kind of what you're making assumptions?
That could be the case. Mm-hmm. Right, that certainly could be the case, right? You have some small tribes that are small in terms of population, but maybe they have many, many employees. And some of those employees might be citizens of the tribe itself. They might be citizens of another tribe. But it's also likely that many of them are not tribal citizens so much. And it's true that the ARPA, the legislation behind ARPA, includes things like, you know, overcoming economic hardship and compensating for governmental expenditures that went unmet because of tribal enterprise being closed down. So that's where you start to get in the policy question of how you weight these things, how you'd want to weight these things. And I've estimated the numbers tribe by tribe. It took a little bit of numerical analysis. But my estimates show that tribes got, on average, per citizen, $7,524 on average. For all the tribes, if you take the whole pile of money divided by the total population.
Mm-hmm.
But what you find there is a lot of tribes have smaller numbers than that, obviously, by averaging. So even a tribe like Navajo that got $2.1 billion because their population count is so high and their employee count is relatively low, they're below the national average for tribes. So you can argue about whether $2.1 billion is too much money. That'd be one way of looking at it. You could also think about, wait a minute, think of it's very large, it's relatively poor, it has big infrastructure needs. So over the next 5 years, one could use that $2 billion quite easily addressing infrastructure needs in a big land base like that that's underserved and has been underserved with water, sewer, broadband, et cetera, et cetera.
Got it.
Now, go ahead.
Oh, no, just imagining the many times that we've had Navajo speakers on our show. We've had Navajo leaders and citizens on our show talking about all of these different issues that have been just part of the Navajo Nation for a long time. And we're going to have a Navajo leader on the show in just a little bit to talk about some of the plans that they have for this $2 billion from the ARPA fund. So I wanted to ask you, Eric, what prompted the study in the first place?
I'm mostly just curiosity. I mean, me and my colleagues at the Harvard Project got interested in the CARES Act last year. This is kind of a new phenomenon that happened for one of the first times in a certain sense. Major legislation gets passed, And it explicitly included tribes as part of the recipients of the coronavirus relief funding. And so we wrote a number of papers last year about the CARES Act distribution, and maybe some of your listeners are familiar with the controversies around that. And so, of course, we were keeping our eyes on ARPA when it came around, nearly exactly 1 year after the CARES Act. You know, CARES and ARPA happened under two different administrations. Obviously, CARES was under the Trump administration, ARPA was under the Biden administration. But maybe the good news for Indian country is that both administrations remembered to set aside money specifically for the tribes. And it was $8 billion under CARES Act, and it's $20 billion here. So it was substantial money. And so I try to remind people, you know, we should be happy that the two administrations in a row with these two major bills done in rapid succession remembered Indian country. So that's good news. But we've kept our, you know, curiosity about what was the learning between the distribution of the CARES Act, which created some controversy and some litigation and things of that nature, and the ARPA distribution. And now we think we see some better mechanisms for the distribution this go around. The CARES Act had, for example, an unreasonable quick deadline. All the money was supposed to be spent by the end of last calendar year, and that was just not even practical. ARPA, though, gives a three-year planning window, and then 2 years beyond that to for actual expenditure of the funds. So in a certain sense, some of the lack of foresight and lack of thoughtfulness in implementing the distribution that we saw under the CARES Act was addressed in ARPA. What we're currently, you know, curious about, though, is, okay, well, the money went out, and on the face of it, it seems like population counts are being weighted much higher than employee counts. But once you actually do the numbers and kind of reverse engineer an estimate of how much is going towards a tribal citizen versus a tribal employee, you then see that, well, because my estimate of the total number of tribal employees is much lower than the total citizen count, the money that goes to each for each tribal employee is effectively like 3.5 times as high as per each citizen.
Right. All right. Well, that was Eric Henson with the Harvard Project on American Indian Economic Development. We'll be back. We have more to talk about when it comes to dividing funds among all of our federally recognized tribes. You can join our conversation too. We'll be back after this break. A new online source spells out the principles of indigenous food sovereignty. The Sous Chef team is making waves with their first full-service restaurant, and we'll find out more about those meat pies on the show Reservation Dogs. It's all on the menu on the next Native America Calling.
The Indian Arts and Crafts Act protects authentic American Indian and Alaska Native artists and craftspeople and their art and craftwork. Under the Act, it is illegal to market art or craftwork misrepresented as American Indian, Indian, Native American, or Alaska Native made, or as the product of a particular Indian tribe. Reporting potential Act violations can be done at doi.gov/IACB or at 1-888-ART-FAKE, support provided by Indian Arts and Crafts Board.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Andy Murphy. We're talking about how the federal government divides money among the 574 federally recognized tribes. A Harvard Project study suggests the distribution formula for the $20 billion leads to inequities among tribes. If you're a tribal leader, how are you using ARPA funds to restore or strengthen your community? Do you think the couple million dollars that you got from ARPA funds is enough to restore and strengthen your Native community after this pandemic? Give us a call. Join our conversation. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we are here with Eric Henson, research fellow at the Harvard Project on American Indian Economic Development. So, Eric, who made this formula that the Treasury is using to divide ARPA funds among our federally recognized tribes? How did that formula, how was it created, and how were tribes involved in the creation of that formula for tribes?
Sure. So under the ARPA legislation, the derivation of the formula to distribute the money was left largely to the U.S. Treasury, which was the case also the year before under the CARES Act. And Treasury held a number of webinars and meetings to get input and took written comments from tribes. But in some sense, you know, I think a number of people felt like, well, those consultations were good, but you end up with an hour and you've got 1,000 people online and you just don't have enough time for real back and forth and conversation about the different needs that tribes might have and how different allocation methodologies might address those needs a little bit better. And so I think the Treasury Department ultimately went with something that was, in a sense, data ready. You know, employment numbers are collected by the IRS when you file quarterly payroll tax forms. And because it's less than 600 tribes, you're going to go get information from about enrollment numbers. That's a doable task for the most part. And so some of the things you might want to lend weight to, like some socioeconomic outcomes and whatnot, don't have perfect data collected tribe by tribe. And so my guess is that it seemed like the ease of data and what was available carried the day in terms of the ultimate allocation that was decided.
All right, got it. So I'd like to bring in another guest. Joining us from Window Rock, Arizona is Seth Damon. He is the Speaker of the Navajo Nation Council. Welcome to Native America Calling, Seth.
Thank you very much, Ms. Murphy, for allowing me to be a part of this discussion today. And yate, everyone out there in Indian country.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Speaker Damon. So you're hearing the discussion so far. Eric is talking about how this formula from the Treasury divided funds among tribes. And he actually said that it looks like Navajo Nation, even though got the biggest share of ARPA funds at $2 billion, is maybe that's not enough compared to other tribes. I mean, what do you think of the amount of money that Navajo Nation got from ARPA just based on this formula?
Thank you very much again for allowing us to be on this call. I do thank Mr. Henson for his views coming from the Harvard Project, and thank you for the open discussion that we're having here today. I think one of the, just speaking on behalf of the Navajo Nation Council, one of the biggest things that we can say is that the $2.1 billion that's allocated to the nation, we just want to first of all say thank you to everyone in the federal government, not only in the past administration and the past Congress, but also this administration too as well, and this current elected congressional leaders, not only representing the Navajo Nation, but collectively that supported the Indian country, whether that be both sides of the aisle and trying to make sure that we can go ahead and move forward and trying to build infrastructure and regroup what we've lost. And as you know, the nation had a huge amount of COVID-19 cases, and we sustained a huge amount of loss amongst our people. And I think that that's the most important thing that looking forward, though, is trying to make sure that, we got the CARES funds last year, $715 million, that really tried to identify that we need to stop COVID-19. And now we're moving forward and with this $2.1 billion and trying to recuperate what we've lost. And I know we can't do whatever we have to do in the laws of lives, but what we can do is make sure that we're building that infrastructure for our next seven generations that we do have had and we should have had many years ago in order for us to have those essential needs and services to our people. The ARPA funds, as you can see, it just clearly identified in the in the title itself, it's the road to recovery, you know, and what we're trying to do is build that infrastructure, build that capacity of water, power lines that we really don't have right now, and building the 35,000 needs of new additional homes across the Navajo Nation that's needed for our people in order for us to go ahead and help the guidance of meeting the quality of life, meeting that American life, you know, in order for us to go ahead and have that the decent value of understanding what the basic human rights are. So, again, it might not be a total amount of what we need. As we've known, that we're probably needing 10 times more than what is needed in order to have a full, complete infrastructure build-out across the nation, the Navajo Nation. But we're thankful that this is the right step. That Congress is finally recognizing what we need to do. And it's unfortunate that it took a case like COVID in order for us to really be recognized. So, again, thank you for this discussion.
All right. Were Navajo Nation leaders at the consultation meetings back in March, back when federal, state, tribal leaders were invited to talk about how all these funds were going to be divided? And that was back in when this formula was starting to take form. Were Navajo Nation leaders at those consultation meetings?
Yes, we were part of the discussion, and it was a couple of different consultation meetings that were taking place when we knew that back in March and April and even into early May, when they were trying to come up with recommendations, not only taking into what the consideration was from the CARES Act from last year, but also taking into the new formula base, as was explained by Mr. Hendon there, on the three variables. But there was a certain recommendations as weren't considered, but as noted, it was up to the Treasury's ultimate guidance in order for them to really state, okay, this is what the best possible outsource and the best possible recommendation that they could come forward with. But I have to thank our Honorable President Jonathan Nez and his team members, not only the Speaker's office here too as well, collaboratively working together in trying to work together with the Treasury, but also working together with all the other federally recognized tribes and trying to get their piece of the pie too as well. As we know, it is in Indian country, it doesn't depend on population, it just depends on the rule to access of capital. And I think that's something that really was prevalent in trying to make sure that we all needed to get something out there immediately. And I think that that's the reason why the consideration was taken. But we were there sitting at the table on those meetings. And I thank the Navajo Nation delegation for actually leading some of the charge and changes and making sure that we could go ahead and have that better, the best possible outcome for Indian country.
All right. So that's one perspective from a tribal leader. If you're a tribal leader, how are you using ARPA funds? Give us a call and join our conversation. We're at 1-800-996-2848. Also, if you're a citizen of a tribe, give us a call. Tell us what you think about how your tribe is planning to spend, you know, the couple of million dollars that they recently got from the ARPA funds. Again, that's 1-800-996-2848. I'd like to go back to Eric Henson over at the Harvard Project on American Indian Economic Development. Eric, so Seth Damon, Speaker Damon, was talking about, you know, there were maybe some other considerations when it came to creating this formula. What were some of those other considerations that maybe didn't make it into the XYZ of this formula?
Right, that's a great question. I think, you know, Navajo is a good example because, as we were both mentioning, there's been underinvestment in rural America in general and Indian country, rural Indian country in particular. And so, you know, you've had a couple of looks at this from, say, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, one back in 2003 and then one at the very end of 2018. It's laid out and enumerated the just tremendous generations of underinvestment that keeps poor rural places from catching up to where the rest of the country sits in all terms, all sorts of socioeconomic outcomes. You know, there's underinvestment in sort of this hard infrastructure like water and sewer and broadband and electrification, but there's also typically underinvestment in educational facilities, policing resources, the list goes on and on. It's kind of nearly every single aspect where federal spending intersects with tribal affairs, you find that there's an underinvestment on the part of the federal government. And so $2 billion sounds like a lot of money to virtually everyone. But if you're trying to catch up from decades and decades of underinvestment, you're still likely to fall quite short if you've got as large a land base as a place like Navajo. So it's great. It's an excellent start. Speaker Damon, you know, mentioned his thanks to the Congress of the previous administration and the current administration, Congress in both years, last year and this year, and that's well placed. But we all ought to collectively try to stay in front of Congress and whoever's in the executive office and remind them that it's going to take a lot more than $20 billion spread around Indian country to really bring tribes up to where the average American sits in terms of all sorts of health and education and employment and opportunities and all of those outcomes that we certainly want for all of our Indian people.
Yeah. So this was the biggest single federal allocation of money for tribes in all of history. What precedent does this set for any future allocations from the federal government directly to tribes?
Well, I guess I hope we're on a pattern. You know, do two major legislative acts a year apart start to make a pattern? I hope so. I hope that, you know, the recognition of the tribes as independent sovereign governments, and now that that's sort of being recognized with substantial dollars, I hope that Congress in the future doesn't forget this time period and go back to more or less treating tribes like they're subdivisions of the states within which they happen to lie. And I'm Chickasaw, so our tribe sits entirely within the exterior boundaries of Oklahoma. It's just, it's wrong policy to treat Chickasaw citizens as just Oklahomans. And if there's, you know, a transportation bill or an infrastructure bill or whatever, to go, well, Oklahoma's going to get a share, so that'll automatically necessarily take care of Chickasaw lands as well. And I think we need to make sure that we don't get forgotten again. We're sort of the forgotten silent minority for so long. These are two major legislative acts that put real dollars into Indian country, and we need to keep that trend alive.
Got it. All right, so I'd like to bring in another tribal leader. Joining us from Edgartown, Massachusetts, is Cheryl Andrews Maltese. She is the chairwoman of the Wampanoag tribe of Gayhead Aquinnah. Welcome to Native America Calling, Chairwoman.
Manikisak, Katapatash, for having me. Thank you. Hello, and thank you for having me. My name is Cheryl Andrews Maltese, and I'm the chairwoman of the Wampanoag Tribe of Gayhead Aquinna. And we're situated on the island of Nopi, now known as Martha's Vineyard, off the coast of Massachusetts. And so we're in a completely different situation than a lot of the other tribes. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate this opportunity to share our thoughts and perspectives and how we feel about the allocation that Treasury had sent out to the tribes.
All right. So looking at the formula that the U.S. Treasury uses to divide all this money, you're hearing Eric Henson talk about the analysis that he did over at the Harvard Project. Do you think your tribe got a fair and adequate share of the money?
While we are extremely grateful for the funding that we did get, because it's more money than we've received thus far in all of our years of being established, I do not feel that we got a fair and equitable share of the funding that was allocated out to Indian country. All tribes are entitled to the benefits of the trust and treaty obligation of the United States equally and equitably. And underneath the formula that was used, so many tribes did not get a fair or equitable share to establish their government's programs and services, or reinforce or enhance their government's programs and services, because we strongly felt that these funds were supposed to be to support the tribal governments to provide for those necessary and critical programs and services that support our communities in the fight against the pandemic, for the prevention and protections against education and mitigation, as well as dealing with the impacts of the pandemic. And the way that this formula shook out, it did not have the desired intent from how we interpreted this, the intent of these funds were supposed to be.
All right. Well, Chairwoman, we'll bring you back right after the break and get a little bit more details about how your tribe compares to others in that area. So give us a call and join our conversation. We'll be back.
How me takuye piki? Takuni akipche an kishni o. Wana awai glag. Ich ika gayo ni oyate ki ob. La kozanya oti elayo isam wasoli at shihanta. Lel yayo healthcare.gov nishlimas apchayo. 1-800-318-2596. Le wot khaniki Medicare na Medicaid oti etan hiu apelo. Ho hechetu elo.
Thank you for tuning into Native America Calling. I'm Andy Murphy. We're talking about how tribes receive federal funds and, most recently, federal pandemic relief funds from ARPA, the American Rescue Plan Act. Do you think tribes should get money based on citizenship, reservation landmass, or employee numbers? There's still time to join our conversation. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And I'd like to go back to Chairwoman Cheryl Andrews Maltese. She is the chairwoman of the Wampanoag Tribe of Gayhead Aquinna. So, Chairwoman, before the break, you were saying that the formula that the Treasury used to allocate and divide all these billions and millions of dollars to our federally recognized tribes isn't fair to a lot of tribes, to your tribe. How much did your tribe get, and how does that compare to other tribes in your area, maybe other tribes that are the same size?
Our tribe received approximately $9 million, and as I said, we're very grateful for that. But similarly situated tribes of the same number, without the astronomically high cost of living or cost of goods and services, received 10 and significantly more. I mean, $200 million went to a tribe That's up, you know, on the mainland up the road a little bit. $96 million went to another tribe that was nearby. And other tribes got like $35, $40 million that are similar in size, scope, and nature. But what I think is important to truly underscore is that I don't think that there was enough money set aside for the tribes based upon what Eric had said with the broken promises and quiet crisis report. We know that tribes have been grossly underfunded for decades and, in our case, centuries. And it didn't allow the tribes to get an equal playing field because we all paid it forward with the lives of our ancestors, our lands, and natural resources. So all tribes are entitled to this benefit and support that the United States promised us as a trust and treaty obligation to assist us in reestablishing our governments and to be able to provide for the well-being, education, and health of our tribal nations. So the way that these formulas are established, it's almost like pitting tribe against tribe for the benefit of the necessary dollars that we need in order to reestablish our governments and care for our people. So we want to make sure that the audience, as well as all the tribal leaders, know and understand that, you know, nobody's coming from a point of that we begrudge any other tribe or tribal nation the right to expect that they have significant and or at least adequate funding to try to accomplish this mission to rebuild our nations. However, the equity or lack thereof is what has been really important because so many of us, the smaller tribes or tribes that have not had a treaty our relationship with the United States government because our lands were taken from us long before there was a United States government or there were other circumstances that took time for us to be able to reestablish that relationship, we've been overlooked. And because most of these programs and most of the thought process is based upon an antiquated reservation system, many tribes, including the Alaska tribes and villages, are not able to have their people in their traditional homelands because of circumstance for economics, education, or for employment. So therefore, there are also failed federal policies that forced Indians and tribal members off our tribal lands in order to go into the cities in the more urban areas through job training and placement, which created another whole situation of problems that we have to face. So many tribes are in so many different stages of their government reestablishment. We're all so unique in nature, need, size, scope, and scale that it's impossible to have a one-size-fits-all type of formula. And that's why we work so hard to try to get Treasury to understand that it has to be a basic formula with the largest proportion, the largest portion being equally split amongst the tribes so that we can level that playing field so some tribes can get a foothold, begin to rebuild and or expand or advance and or plan, and then weighted by special circumstances like population, which is a critical consideration. Landmass for large land-based tribes, that's another critical one. But then there's also another consideration of special circumstances, high cost of living, cost of goods and services, like in Alaska, Hawaiian natives, in our neck of the woods, where there's no more land on the island. We can't afford to live here. We're being cost right out of being able to stay, live, and work in our homelands. So all of those things are special circumstances. There should always be a floor minimum. There should always be a cap. Some tribes have no land yet, but we all have to buy our land back. And that's what's unfair, because you cannot begin to rebuild your communities without having a land base. And if you don't have the money, and when an acre of land costs what it costs, like here on Martha's Vineyard, and no one's willing to sell to you, you need more funding to be able to start, establish, maintain the governments that we're trying to rebuild.
Definitely. Yeah. This formula, didn't take into account a lot of those different situations. It's kind of mind-boggling to know that there are so many tribes out there. And I know it's going to take a lot of work to kind of level that playing field, what you mentioned. I'd like to go back to you, Chairwoman. So you got $9 million. What are some of the plans for that money, and how is that going to kind of rebuild and help repair what was kind of lost and affected during the pandemic?
Well, first and foremost, we are looking at how we replenish the funding that we needed to expend at a higher level for our emergency services to our tribal community members. We had so many people that lost their jobs or were affected or put out of work. And so when the protections for rental, you know, not being able to pay your rent. So if people were unable to pay their rent, your utility bills, you know, the cost of goods and food and services is just climbing. We have an elder population. We had a population that was hit by, you know, having to have increased burial assistance, increased need for cleaning services, PPE, vaccination stations, and everything that it took to be able to try to mitigate the effects of the pandemic. So we have a portion of that money that we're reviewing for helping to support financially our community members, you know, and being able to provide them with basic needs, subsistence types of support. Then we also have to worry about, you know, the outfitting and the retrofitting of not only our buildings and being able to create safe social distancing within our buildings, but also what that impact is with our infrastructure with wastewater treatment plants. The island itself has maxed out the town's wastewater treatment plants. And if we want to be able to try to attempt to build housing for our people to be able to stay here and unpack the generations so that it's a little bit safer for them as far as family health, that's very expensive for us. It's not like we can get an acre of land for, you know, $50,000 or anywhere close. We're talking an acre of land for hundreds of thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. So that we have to look at that. Plus, we also don't know what the long-term, long-haul effects are, both on the health, emotional, and economic well-being of our tribal community. And so with the uncertainty or inequity with how these formulas are allocating the money out, we also have to reserve for the unanticipated and the unknown costs that we're going to be faced with because we don't know what we don't know. And as we've all experienced, this pandemic has never been seen before, and therefore we continuously learn from the effects of this, and we have to be able to adapt. So we have to hold in reserve some funds for that because we just don't know what other financial impacts we're going to be faced with. Mm-hmm. And if Indian Country is not part of the infrastructure bill with our own carve-out for the infrastructure needs that we have in our own tribal communities, then we're going to be left out and we're going to be left behind, and we need to be at the table with those deliberations and the decision makers, and this time maybe have our voices heard more clearly and speaking directly to the decision makers with voices of all tribes or tribal status, not just the larger wealthy tribes, but the smaller tribes or the landless tribes or the medium-sized tribes that don't have infrastructure or that do not have a side or economic development economy that can help support the government of the tribes.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you so much for that, Chairwoman. So I'd like to bring in one more guest. Joining us from Boulder, Colorado is Patrice Kunish. She is the director of Pehin Haha Consulting, development officer for the Native American Rights Fund, and creator of the Center for Indian Country Development at the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. She is Standing Rock Sioux descent. Welcome to Native America Calling, Patrice.
I'm paying to watch day, Mita Kawapi, and thank you, Andy, and all my relatives for the honor of participating in this conversation.
Yeah. All right. So a while ago, in the beginning of the hour, I asked Eric Henson this question, and I'd like to ask you the same thing, since you kind of are kind of focused on all of Indian Country's economic development. You know, this is the largest federal allocation of money to tribes in all of history. What precedent does this set for any future allocations?
Well, certainly there are tremendous lessons to learn from both the CARES Act formula and distribution, and the ARPA formula and distribution. And I think we can all very much appreciate that no formula is perfect, and no formula can perfectly capture the particular needs of tribes, as we've heard from our tribal leaders on this call. But I do think that we can do better and should be learning from the data and from the distribution outcomes. And I go back to the intent of the formula, which was to be fair and equitable. And certainly I think the intent behind the formulation and distribution is really about fairness. But looking back and looking at the distributions and outcomes, I think that we have more of a systemic issue to be concerned about, and that is equity. And, you know, I'm reminded of Janet Yellen, who's the Secretary of the Department of Treasury, who, as the chair of the Federal Reserve, really highlighted and emphasized the need to look at economic development through an equity lens. She was very keen on promoting the building blocks of opportunity and highlighted those structural and systemic factors that that create inequity. So many of the concerns that we've heard today can be looked at, you know, from within the system within Treasury, and some of those could be obviously the consultation process, where despite the hundreds of hours and comments and so forth, some messages were missed, some warnings and cautious concerns were overlooked, and I think consultation is an incredibly valuable way to affirm and ensure equity within the consideration of any sort of formula development. I think the other thing that we've learned here is that not only do we need sort of more focused or targeted consultation, we need to kind of look at the design for sustained fairness. Senator Wyden, for example, and other senators sent a letter over to Janet Yellen, Secretary of the Treasury, and pointed out the inequities that Eric has highlighted, as well as the concerns that the tribal leaders have shared. And they've called for Treasury to establish an Office of Tribal Affairs. And, based on maybe some missed messages in consultation and looking back now on the disparate outcomes of the distribution. And so I take that very seriously, Senator Wyden's concern about making sure that Native people themselves have a seat at the table in all the design and implementation and engagement around all the things that Treasury does, from not just distribution of funds like the recovery funds, but, you know, areas such as taxation, economic development, access to capital, and so forth. So I take that as a very strong recommendation. And I think the other part of equity and fairness, looking back now, might be to trigger something else. And that something else is sort of this equalization or stabilization fund that's also included in the ARPA. And in fact, this is, again, Senator Wyden's creation. It's a consistency fund, a tribal consistency fund. So although we've had three distributions, there might be an opportunity to use these tribal consistency funds to smooth out some of the inequities and disparate outcomes. And those funds are there, $500 million over the course of 2 years. And I think this would be a great opportunity to sort of embrace these lessons learned and see what we can do, as Chairwoman Maltay said, you know, to look at the most disadvantaged and see what those particular concerns are and try to fill those gaps and bridge those challenges.
Wow. All right. Thank you so much for that. You answered my question that I had for you next, which is where do we go from here? So thank you so much, Patrice Kunish, for joining us. This is the end of the hour. I'd like to also say thank you to the other guests we had on the show, Eric Henson, Chairwoman Cheryl Andrews Maltese, and Speaker Seth Damon.
Sestiti to go on hioti, where tata yon he uhug, a dartle he, a hitly don't hanty. The dog says testi to sa alena aye to dolly. We tell no heta yellen udan a dega and access diski at healthcare.gov, ale 1-800-318-2596. He are get to know some Medicare, ale Medicaid una dalka.
Support by Navajo Language Renaissance, presenting Rosetta Stone Navajo for iPads, iPhones, Chromebooks, and Android devices with two learning levels and a self-correcting pronunciation feature. Info at NavajoRenaissance.org. This reminder to get your COVID-19 vaccination is provided by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who support this show. Info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.